be, yeah, absolutely.
So news people of any level are helping feed the ignorant.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not going to pay any attention to the news content.
I look at the news people, and I see a lot of reporters who, they look like they're just fighting to survive in the business. And they're just willing to read the teleprompter, whatever it says. They have no confidence in what they're saying, other than the fact that it's keeping them employed for another
and
day.
And the people let them do that, because anybody can read the prompter. We need to keep people reading the prompter so we don't acknowledge the addictive space we're in.
Addictive space? What's the space?
The tactile electric extension.
That you'll get in your car and turn on the...
Yeah.
And even though you're not... And plus, you're driving. You're not even thinking about what's on the radio. It's like the people that fall asleep in front of their television and they just have this...
Yeah, try to perceive that this space is a living new oxygen and you need to breathe it. If it's there, you need to breathe it.
But like you say, we've had it since
for 150 years.
Yeah, for 150 years. But it's more. But it keeps getting more intense. Because as we keep adding new technologies, we add the internet and the computer on top as becomes an envelope
That's
around.
What Kirchhoff was mentioning in the documentary, that electricity is the medium, not the TV, the radio, the internet.
Yeah, but as we keep adding layer upon layer of electronic envelopes,
yeah,
the electronic intensity keeps getting more
the intensity
fierce.
Is we have to have brighter baubles and gadgets and more involving mixed media involving all the senses to distract
us. We have to take it with us. We want to take it with us now.
No, we have to ignore the addictive fact, okay? How do we ignore it? Well, we ignore it in the 50s with black and white TV. Then we ignore it with color TV. Then we have cable TV. Then we have internet. Then we have home. Always keep upping the ante, so we ignore it.
Right.
So maybe after 150 years, we might notice what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So the journalists get more frantic with more exciting baubles to distract them from what Bob's telling them.
So what?
You get
what,
that?
Yes, but what's
so
going
that's
on?
Why it's getting more colorful and bright. Pretty soon, you'll be in a major tube, you know,
so what are we numbing then? What's getting numb?
The implications of that space.
An implication doesn't get numb. What's it
oh, yeah,
numb?
The implications, the effects.
But what's it affecting?
Hey, hi.
Do you like a coffee or a hot chocolate?
And people see on TV all the time, right?
Right?
So they see cops, law and order, it's all fucking bodyguards and paranoia. People looking over the Hillary Clinton, don't shoot Hillary, you know? So it was a TV body. I used the TV body imagery
yes.
as a hidden subtext that blew him away.
Yes, exactly.
Because we didn't have TV, we didn't know what I was talking about. What are bodyguards? Why? We're all nice people, small town, you know. 150 years ago in America, you know, it was a nice little place. You don't need bodyguards.
Yeah. It's like it's got Rose Squirrel, is it, you know?
Yeah.
At the same time.
So there's the two bodies.
But then what would have happened if Hillary was assassinated?
My question is, has happened we can protect Hillary from being assassinated, and they couldn't protect this woman in Pakistan?
Well, she apparently put her head out through a sunroof
and
get shot.
You know, I didn't know this, but the guy, the lefties told me that the military said she could come to their compound and speak. So she walked into the nest of the assassins, the military, and pretend, I don't know why she thought that they were protected, because they're the people, the many people in the military who were throw up. But here's the thing. Now, here's what he said, is the government there says she died. She didn't get shot. She fell over. Maybe the shots happened. She ducked from the shots and fell over and hit her head and died. They're blaming her.
Yes. You believe that? She can sue Chevrolet. You know, she can sue Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. It's not Al Qaeda. It's not Mashaab. It's Chevrolet.
But it certainly distracts us from the issue and the question about how we're addicted to this situation.
She had this.
Because they affect us. Because that very same virtual environment, that body, whatever body the television body is, that reality can come in some kind of a...
Do you know...
Come on.
No, I know what it is. No, here it is. Andrew Crystal said to me, he said, Bob, what has staying power? He's just killing people. His staying power. I said, that's right. We keep showing more and more chemical bodies being killed to distract us from the death caused by the TV and ship body, the electric space.
You're saying that the electric space calls for carnage?
Yes. In other words, the more and more death. So like Kuhn said, bad news sells good news.
Why doesn't cold fusion good boom?
Because it upsets everybody. It means you have to change. So we need a lot of bad news or dead chemical bodies to make us feel like we're a survivor.
Okay, this is
it's interesting. Are you following? Are you with me?
I like the survivor mentality of
emotion.
Emotion, where like the Britney Spears, she has it's like a train wreck every day.
Yeah.
Wow, I survived that one. Whoa, I survived that one. The same with people being killed. Wow, we survived that one.
So Andrew made an interesting statement.
Survivor.
Oh, you're thinking if you're watching Britney go through this, you're
thinking I'm better than she.
Oh, okay. You're not in her shoes and saying, oh, what would I do in that position? No. I'm just thinking, look at that.
I survived. Look at that.
Yeah. And Britney can even be proud of it.
$2,800 a day.
So she can continue bashing herself up, so she can give herself a sense of survival. Too.
The sense of survival, the hero.
Yeah, everybody, the victim and the victor
are
all trying to look like they survived the abuse.
Well, everybody's experiencing tragedy in their own life, but at least they can feel equal to this billion dollar, multi-billion dollar pop star who we used to worship, and now we can say, oh yeah, she's going through the same shit I am.
And I'm better than her because nobody knows I'm going through my shit. Everybody knows she is. Oh, how humiliating.
But they feed, but
they feel better. Don't you think? Like when you see someone really messed up on the pump,
I'm glad I don't have $220 million.
So I mean, what is it then? I mean,
fair possible. Is that a reflection?
When she got beaten up
years
her
ago.
Boyfriend up a few years ago. You immediately judge her. She's got all that money. She's messed up. What's it called? But you still want to be like them. You still want to. You want to be.
Still want to have 20 million people adulating you and have all the money.
I've survived so that I can become rich like Farrah, and I won't make that mistake.
I wouldn't make that
mistake. Whatever his name is, Jackson, holds the baby, goes, hey, look at that. And, you know, drops the baby over there. That's a frightening image.
Steve Irwin handing his baby to an alligator.
Part of the reality TV
says,
what is Michael Jackson?
I wouldn't make that mistake.
I'm not that fucking stupid.
Stop.
You know the problem with our society is everybody's dumbed down, but you're the one who's real smart because you're pointing out that everybody's dumbed down. Then they say, okay, your turn to be smart for a millisecond, and you repeat the same mantra.
Right. Thank you. Hey, Scott, you have this flat room.
Oh, yeah, that's for noise.
So, Bob, check this out. They killed it. When did they kill live TV? Because it was too electric.
Mid-60s. Dave Worcester says mid-60s.
Now look at how we're getting closer and closer to live TV as we watch, the reality TVs coming. That's not live, it's pre-taped. But it's getting close to live because we're watching
news is live.
Sports is live.
Sports is live. But sports doesn't evoke political. You don't have sports people all of a sudden coming out of the huddle and then holding up protest signs against the President of the United States or something. Unpredictable, uncontrolled event.
Just the occasional streaker.
Yeah, the occasional streaker.
That was last attempt.
As we get closer and closer to this reality TV and closer to the date, I mean, movie stars they were the celluloid heroes. You really didn't know about their personal lives, but you had this fantasy about them. Now we get more and more reality about them because the paparazzi are following them around from minute to minute, and we're getting closer and closer to the live TV sensibility.
But
we're we're still, you know.
And
I mean,
your point is.
Well, the paparazzi are taking pictures, and they're out there with their cameras, and the stuff's getting posted to the internet. And there's this time delay, and it's maybe an hour or 2 hours or 24 hours, but it's getting closer and closer to closing that gap and getting back to live TV.
It's a total lie because they'll get a picture and they'll make up a story.
Yeah.
None of those stories are real.
Yeah.
So and they'll never get to total liveness because which story or person are you going to focus on?
Yeah.
Every news agent, millions in the world, are going to present live things. Which one are you going to look at and which one are they going to show?
It'll
all cancel out.
It's like the Truman Show.
Yeah. So it already is as live as it could be.
The what?
It's already as live as it could be.
Well, no,
the survivorship.
Well,
American Idol.
But you don't have the totally unpredictable random.
Well, that's news. See, that's what news is. News 24/7, CNN, they're always, you know, anything happens, they're there in 10 minutes. So news is the closest you can get to live.
That's right.
And they determine there's so much news it could be live, so they determine what's going to be live.
Like, yeah, I work at KNX, and so I do the morning show from like 8 to 1. We sit there and we look at all the international AP wires, all the breaking news, and they sit there and pick and choose what's going to go out.
Yeah.
I can't believe the taste or the bias or the disposition of like the editors and
of the choices.
The choices they make.
You know, you're actually have been prepared for this weird job life you're in this past year by me.
Yeah,
you're the only one going in there with the Bob talk. And you're watching, are they favoring the chemical? Well, this is what you could think.
Yeah.
Are they favoring the chemical body or the TV body? Which body in that choice?
The advertising body.
Okay, yeah,
right.
That's TV body.
Right.
So go back to what you were saying.
For the advertising body.
Yeah.
There's a whole break. That's like what drives the whole broadcast, is making particular, like...
But tell us what you noticed about the decision-making.
Well, you work in the radio body. That's not the TV body.
Oh, yeah, no, TV.
But the radio body
TV
breaks
and radio.
TV. Radio breaks everything. It's so spontaneous.
They're the same thing. It's one-way broadcast. No, it's one-way
broadcast. Before television, though. Television has to get the picture. We can go for words.
Right. But the thing is that they are both one-way. You can't interact back until you have the talk show.
But do people come into us, though?
Oh, yeah, there is the interaction. The interactivity is...
Thank you so much.
We're so interactive. It's almost like...
Well, no coffee.
The interactivity is another aspect of total aliveness. Because anybody can call in with anything. We fall back on the TV body, which is one-way broadcasting.
Right.
Radio, TV, you got to get something.
You know... When someone calls in, it's one voice, it's one point of view in the mass mind. You can't have a spontaneous outbreak of mass mind.
That's right.
Uncontrolled.
Okay.
It can't. I mean, what's his name?
Alex Jones. Hey, Scott, you're not listening, Scott. I was telling you your answer that you were just going.
Go ahead.
Okay. I want to tell you. I just want to be polite and want her to get her butter. The TV body is one-way media. One way. So you have everybody's phoning everybody and telling everybody everything, and the internet is like a constant telephone. So people can't have everybody determining what their issue is and immediately broadcasting it. So we fall back on the one-way broadcasting sentiment, and that's news. You're monitoring one way. So you get a million calls, and they monitor millions of TV stations. Then they say, we will now tell you, so you can pretend you're an audience and relax and pretend that someone's in control and determining what's important of all the phone calls we get 24/7. So that's the TV body's a very subtle fallback. All right, someone else can tell me.
Yeah.
Where's the chip body?
Thank you.
The chip body is the constant interacting with your cell phone and your internet and somebody calling you and saying, well, we better tell these people that, blah, blah, blah. So that's...
Yeah, but that never enters the public space. It's always private communications between two people.
That's right. That's where we live. That's the hidden ground. That's where we're way past broadcasting. But we naturally, humans, need a rest. So you rest by keeping CNN alive and her job, where we say, oh, somebody's going to determine which thing is important.
And being on the internet?
Yeah, versus being chip body interacting and claiming, and yet that is where the economy is. That's the 0-1 millions economy is going back in the speed of light constantly, 24/7 around the world economic grid. Right. But, so we go home and sit down and let someone tell us something, right, and we pretend that to be real. Right. It ain't, because as soon as we get up, we ignore what we just heard, and we got to get out there and start creating the new reality, which is talking to somebody and saying, hey, let's make a deal.
How the TV body cancels the chip body is that they take telephone calls or emails, or they monitor the bloggers and they go, well, Joe says yes, but Sally says no, and Ron says yes, but Robert says no, and they just keep canceling everybody's opinion.
Yeah, that's right. But you're in a passive position, so that's it. It's really a tactile interplay. It's one way, then two way. One way, two way. And depending how much you want to perceive it, you can see it's happening very fast or very slow. A woman gets an old lady gets a call from her daughter at noon hour. Then she wobbles around, makes her coffee, and falls down the couch and watches a little TV for 3 hours, and then takes her Valium and goes to sleep. That's her day. Had a little interactive call. Meanwhile, there's millions of people screaming and yelling on the stock exchange.
Right. I mean, if you want to see, it is right now. There's so much communication. I often said this on the show. So much communication going on, and omnidirectional.
Yeah. It is totally, the clearest image you have of it is chaos. And that's a compromise to the fact that there's nothing being communicated, just everybody's frantically involved. Involved, yakking, chatting, moves.
So that sounds like a lot of communication. So what do you mean nothing's being communicated? The way I hear it is that everything's being canceled out by
everything
else.
That's what I mean. Canceling out. Nothing's being communicated. It gets canceled out until we relax and go home. And Dan Rather tells you, hey, somebody got blown up in Italy today. And you've been blown up 5,000 times intellectually by all the interactions. But look at the chaos you experience in your job. You're watching these people run around. They say, okay, do this. Then they come in 2 minutes later. Oh, no, don't put that one on. We're going to do this one.
Right.
And it goes on all day long. Then you got to go to another station. Then you do it at another station.
The most profound example of this canceling out was that election a couple of times ago where Republicans canceled out the Democrats, Democrats canceled out the Republicans, and nobody could figure out who the president was.
Yeah. And I predicted that. I said, you cannot get...
But that's not going to happen again, so that means that something's changed.
Yeah, nothing's going to happen again. They declared martial law on Wall Street this summer. The city's waiting for martial law here. That's already happened.
There's no evidence of that other than Chris Story.
Okay, I posted on my website an editorial on the Wall Street, or no, an op-ed on the Wall Street Journal yesterday. The headline is, China Buys Wall Street. Okay, that's the headline. We know a lot about that, but anyways, China Buys Wall Street. They posted it on my Five Body. Read it. There's this guy who's very involved with the investors all over the world, and he spells out how China bought Wall Street this summer. That happened this summer.
You mean like
China bought it? Wall Street disappeared.
Like the New York Stock Exchange is a privately held company. They bought out the shares.
The New York
Stock Exchange is a privately held. It's a publicly held corporation.
Right.
So they bought out the controlling.
Who did?
China, is that what you mean?
They bought the major companies, the houses.
Morgan Stanley?
Yeah. It's like they bought the technical infrastructure. It might have been what you're saying, but probably a deeper technical infrastructure.
Right.
Now, you read worldreports.org, it was explained there's nothing there, and then he said there's martial law in the Wall Street last month. Okay? So, how do you disguise the fact there's martial law, or it ain't controlled by the hedge fund houses and Goldman Sachs? You go one level down and say China bought us. But China is a front for the military action. But it's the same meaning. We don't own Wall Street anymore. Well, China does. It's not a foreign country. We got to go somewhere else to find out who's running Wall Street. That's another way of saying that there's military martial law. In other words, there's an international or some kind of external force that's controlling Wall Street. So we anthropomorphize it by saying China did it.
Mm-hmm. Didn't one of those sovereign funds get a major interest in the London Stock Exchange?
Yeah.
Right.
They're buying each other. I mean, the London Stock Exchange had to send over Sir William Bimhoff to take over Citigroup. Citibank, Citigroup, whatever it is.
Yeah. And Morgan Stanley, I know from one of my clients, her husband's with Morgan Stanley, and they said it collapsed 2 months ago.
Now, that's new news from Christina. Now, when did she tell you that? I mean, on their perceptive level. Because she didn't know that 3 months ago. Remember? You said that she didn't seem to have any problem with her.
No, he was okay.
He was okay. And now
the company was falling apart.
Oh, she told you that 3 months ago?
Right.
And now you have new news?
No.
Oh.
Well, China's so tied in with our economy, it's to their interest.
There's no such thing as China. There's no such thing as China on this digital level. See, that's what I'm saying. It's one step down. China buys. Well, what the fuck is China? Well, they're the ones who own us. That's us. We buy ourselves and declare that we're not us.
How interesting is that?
Yeah.
Because
you can't define the boundaries.
They are. Yeah. You know what? Maybe we have all of our manufacturing there, and then we buy the goods that we are able to produce on cheap labor in America. So instead of it in Nebraska, it's in China. So they are us.
The United States expanded. They talk about the global empire and express through the oil companies.
We're squatting there and leasing their country to
back
build
to
the goods. Back to ourselves.
To ship back
and
to
Nebraska expanded and took over the whole world, and the oil companies panicked, and they started focusing in Iraq, pretending that's the world order empire. No, that's one aspect, a subset of the world empire. The world empire is the fact that we bought up Asia and sitting there. And making Nebraska expanded. And those that think they're Nebraskans think they're out of work. But all they have to do is go over and become a Chinese person. They can work in the new Nebraska.
Right. I was going to say that Americans are going to find themselves like Hispanics.
Yeah.
Now, do you know, if we're going to be cheaper labor in some market, but more highly skilled, we work our asses off. We're actually quite an asset to the world if they pay us.
You know what? The fact that the dollar is dropping.
A long way to ring about it.
The fact that the dollar is dropping in value relative to the euro is causing manufacturing to come back into this country because the dollar is cheaper.
Yeah.
Not quick enough. They won't come back quick enough.
No. Thank you.
Can I get anything else here?
I can't believe I ordered this even right after we had this talk about carbs.
I know.
I don't usually eat this, but I don't usually eat out.
You're taping all this?
Stop
taping this whole thing.
The linguistic boundaries don't exist.
Yeah, in the space, the TV space, and the chip-fi space is a no space we live in.
I'll bet within 3 to 5 years, they have good enough translation in the phone mechanism that you could call someone in China, they could speak to you in Chinese, you could speak to them in English, and you will hear each other in your native tongue.
In 10
because
years,
it'll all be translated
right.
by
In 10
the
years, they're going to say, we made a big breakthrough. We can take your chemical body, decompose it, beam you over to China, and you can stand in Peking among the traffic pollution and say, wow, look where I got it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can already do it by telephone.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Right.
So
but it's not the same thing, Bob.
No, it is the same thing when you realize it's the same electric space. Because if you go over in China, you got to deal with these idiots who smoke a lot and pollute and shit. And you'll say, man, get me back to fucking island where I can control my input.
I think I have an insight, Bob.
Good.
Because I never got why you would equate, you know, talking on the telephone with physically being dematerialized and moved to another place. But what you're saying is the other place is the same as this
space, right.
So you haven't really
gone anywhere. That's right. That's it. You just got that now?
Yeah.
Good. But they'll refine it and say, okay, you're tired of being in the same place, not able to move ever, so we're going to actually take this body, like they said in documentary, TV, internet, are just little permutations of the fact of electricity. Electricity is the thing that makes you never get any new other place, right? So we're going to refine it and have you experience the massage of decomposing your body, and we're going to transport you over here, which you've never had that experience before. Okay, so then you're standing in China. Wow, look, I'm here. And maybe some friend of yours is in China and we transport here, and you call each other on the telephone. Say, hey, yeah, I'm standing in...
Hey, I'm in China, and look, there's a McDonald's, and look at the skyscrapers.
Yeah. Look, I can catch Bob. He's on the radio, just like he was at KPFK. And Bob will say, of course, you haven't gone anywhere.
In order to create novelty, they're going to have to go to space migration.
Well, they tried that, and it obviously didn't work, because we're not out there.
We didn't want it bad enough.
No.
We didn't need it bad enough.
No, the people were smart. In the late 60s or 70s, they got bored with the moon flights, and they shut down the program in 1973 because the people knew that they were already traveling better through rock music. You ecstasy quickly. Why go to the moon and be in a little prison thing and get stupid little pellets of food? I mean, it'd be terrible to be in a can going out there. You know, the toilet paper would be lousy. Oh, geez. Yeah, so what was happening in the late 60s is that because the chemical body was decomposing, everybody started fucking everybody. So why go to the moon to get fucked? You can fuck anybody all over. This is when people got on the birth control pill, and they had the sexual revolution. They had great music, had great drugs. This is all before AIDS. And it just got better and better and absurder, and everybody got divorced, the older people, and the young people were going to college and partying. So that's way more attractive than why go to the moon? Why do we go there? I don't know what you think you're going to find it there. Everything, as McLuhan said, all possible futures already exist right now.
Right.
So the specialized future of going to the moon, hey, look, we got to this physical place called the moon. That's slow and boring compared to I can go to five places during the day, considering I listen to radio, FM, and 969, then listen, watch TV, then go watch the ball game, then go swimming.
Every time you switch the station, you're still going to the same place.
Well, that's my point, right? But we're talking about surface body fads and fantasies, and I'm saying the fantasy of going to the moon was dead by the early 70s because there was other fantasies available.
It's not dead. I mean, they are still planning to do tourism to the moon, and people who can afford it will do it.
For the superficial
space.
For superficial novelty. People still go out and have dinner.
Listen.
People still go out and eat food.
If I had an opportunity to get that to
even though
travel,
it's not real food
travel
anymore.
To the moon, land and come back, it would be the experience of a lifetime. How could you not consider
no,
that?
No, it'd be just right. Another new unique experience.
You'd
inside the electric factory.
Very unique. You would be high for a long time after
no,
that.
I ain't even going when they're offering it. I don't want to go stand there. It'd be cold. Do you have a crummy fucking sweater or I don't know, whatever they make you wear? You know, it'd be stupid. Look, I can talk
Bob
to you.
Standing.
I can have a walk down the street and use my legs. If I'm in a can going to the moon, I can't walk anywhere.
I want to get
irritated. I flew 12 hours from New Zealand, man. That wasn't great.
No.
That was fucking ridiculous.
That's true.
You know?
The 2.5 hours it took me to fly here was miserable.
2.5?
From Portland?
Yeah.
Maybe it was 4. I don't know. But.
Yeah, two hours not bad, but geez, 12 hours. So, you know, I'll only do that once or twice in a lifetime.
Andrew Crystal, you know, I told him, you know, the traffic's getting worse. He goes, no, I don't think there's more cars on the road. I think you have the sense of things being more compacted. And I think he might be right, because I haven't flown for 10 years. And when I got on that plane, I never remembered a plane being, like, feeling that caged in, like, that claustrophobic, like sardines in a can. It was the same size plane I was on the last time, but it definitely felt more crowded. And the plane wasn't filled up. I would say 25% of the seats were empty.
So why did it feel more crowded?
I don't know, but I think maybe Andrew's right.
No, well, he's just repeating me. The point is, you're so used to living in your Art Bell electronic space where you can be everywhere all over the place, but just getting in a little constricted cabin seems more claustrophobic than it did 10 years ago because you think you're moving all over the place with all the different channels and DVDs and movies that you watch. Look at the variety of experiences. You're listening to Art Bell, you're watching a documentary, you're listening to tapes of me, you're on the phone with me, all these different things. Those are, on the surface, different shifts into different spaces. You actually have to sit in a car or sit in an airplane for 2 hours. That's very limiting. So that's why it'll seem more claustrophobic.
Is it limiting because you just don't have access to those electronic
You
bodies.
Can't shift spaces.
Yeah.
And you see, everybody, as soon as we land, everybody gets their cell phone and get the hell out of the plane before the chemical body does.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's funny, they're getting up. I never get up right away, but they're getting up like this. Yeah, I'm just going to land it. Get this up. Who's getting up? He's on the cell phone. Yeah, you've seen it.
And you see people sitting at tables together, and they're each on a cell phone, not looking at each other, talking. It's strange. Wow.
Yeah. So these are space, all of it.
When I used to see people like that walking together with cell phones, are you guys talking to each other?
Yeah.
Right. Oh,
the worst thing is these little things that clip on your ear.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not holding their hand to their head. They're just walking around talking out loud. And you don't see the thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Well, the treatment for schizophrenia should be giving schizophrenic cell phones and not plug them in or anything so they can look normal.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Again, give them what?
Cell phones so that they can be talking to themselves.
And looking normal. but they'll be just plastic.
Yeah.
I came up with a new form of Manipian satire. I don't think you heard this. When I go back to New York City, if I feel like it, I'm going to get a cell phone. I'm going to walk down the street, and I'm going to go to a New York Film Festival, and there will be some new whippersnapper who has a great movie, and he'll be a new guy, and you hope that Steven Spielberg will have noticed it and hire him immediately, give him $1 million to do a new movie. At the break of the movie, I go out in the lobby, and I'll start yelling on my cell phone. I go, "Who's this? Steve Spielberg. Steve. Okay, Steve. What's this? No. Let's call the guy who made the movie, Bill Bradley, whose friends have watched it. It's a great movie, and everybody loves it. And they're out in the lobby, a celery. I'll go, Bradley. No fucking way. Bradley is a total fucking asshole. No way, Mr. Spielberg, are you going to hire him? No way. No. Not $2 million. No. Do not. And scream and yell as if I'm talking to Spielberg right in front of Bradley's team. And what are they going to fucking do? Look at that fool. Do you know him? No. He seems to know Spielberg, and he didn't like our movie, and he's interrupting. That's the way you do Manipulator. So that's one thing to do, right? You just go to the thing, find out who won. We have a fucking scene screaming on your cell phone in the lobby right after the movie.
You know, Tom.
And they're watching their life dream milk by right. Some anonymous guy saying, "Mr. Spielberg, I know Mr. Bradley. He fucks his wife, he fucks his dog, he fucks his kids, blah, 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 blah." Now, you know, what are they going to do?
And then paparazzi's picking all this up on tape.
Yeah.
Now it's getting printed in the media.
Yeah. And I disappear in the crowd. Who was that guy? Nobody knows. I mean, you can't prove what the fuck he was. I'm not in the industry, actually. I could just disappear. How are they going to identify you?
Right.
And so, you know, Tom.
Then you did another. Then you can do other things. You walk down the street and you see a guy walking along. He's got a purple suit on. This is a man here, blue, golden tie. And as you approach, you start screaming, "Yeah, he's got a purple tie on, a blue suit." And he totally described him. And the guy's going on top, and he's going,
describing you. What the fuck?
This is the modern Manipian satire. And you do all these immediate self-awareness mirror reflecting on anybody you want to do. This is a new form. Wouldn't that be amazing? And you get an alibi because he's on a chip body. His chemical body is just part of him. I can't stop it. They wouldn't be able to stop me. It's not against the law to describe someone on the street, you know.
You get someone to film you and then you
done. Yeah, then you get a documentary on a new form of prankster.
Oh my God.
There's a guy who...
So we were laughing our heads off about this yesterday.
Yeah.
I think it was me and you weren't there. It might have been Terrence and Terry and Nancy. And we were, whoever it was, we were rolling on the floor with this.
One time I was a kid where when I just got my driver's license, we decided just to follow somebody, and we just started tailing this guy. You know, we saw him on TV.
Yeah.
And we said, "Yeah, let's play like 1 Adam 12.
Yeah.
And I swear, this guy really started to freak out after a while.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like what you're saying.
Well, you know what?
You start acting.
When somebody is being aggressive in a car in traffic, I have no idea whether it's just some pimply teenager or some guy with a tire iron under his...
Yeah, who singled you out.
That car represents danger. You don't know who's behind the wheel.
Yeah.
That is such a great... I had this one little road rage incident where I'm a really good driver, right? And I'm going down to Oceanside, and this car cuts in front of me in the fast lane. It starts to slow down, big gap of cars, and I'm kind of like, what are you doing? So I just like take off. The person comes up and finds me and goes like this to me.
You mean by car? Like, they're still in the car.
They're still in the car. They find me in the traffic and they come up and they go like this.
You're this.
Yeah,
crazy.
They're crazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, "I'm crazy. I was driving. You cut me off. You slow down." So I tail, I'm on your tail because you slow down. But you're being the idiot. He's the asshole in that situation, right? So she takes off and I decide, okay, just to teach you a lesson, Esther, you don't know who
you're dealing with.
You think I'm crazy? I'm going to do something crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was great. She was over in like this, one of these lanes, and so I come up right up on her blind side, and I come up right beside her, I just go, boom.
Yeah.
I was going to run into her. And she honks her horn and Rose Wayne was great.
Well, you watched her reaction.
Oh, yeah.
And she was panicking.
Yeah. And then she curved and took off. It was just like, if he says, that's not the case.
Yeah, no, but the point is you proved that you were insane.
Yes. It's like just to let people know you don't know who you're talking to. I'm actually a nice person.
Yeah.
But just to let you know that if you do that to folks, I mean, you might run into somebody who...
That's why everybody in New York City is sort of not, is impersonal, and as soon as you interact with them, they're very friendly.
Right.
They don't know who the hell they're talking to.
Right, exactly.
You know, you might say, no, I'm not going to tell you where the street is, because Andy goes, fuck.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, it's, Dave Worster told me in 69 when he went to jail for a few weeks, it was like the heaven, because everybody was super aware.
Right.
Everybody was very attentive when you're in jail.
Right.
They're paying attention to their interactions and vibes between people. And that's what New York City is like.
Go. Get out.
There he goes. Two psychos.
Here's the bounce.
One guy is the owner.
About?
What?
What were we just talking about?
Yeah, that. We may have created that.
Uh-oh.
No, he has to pretend that he's in control. That guy might come back and shoot him someday.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's very hard. I mean, there's
so
many situations like that.
Stay
now.
Home.
You know? No, you're just nice. You try and do it in the most polite ways possible. You know?
Right. So, how do we get on to that? So I'm going back to the electric space.
Yeah.
The electric fact is what's driving everybody nuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were talking about healing, and you were talking about how you know, in our interview, darling, we were talking about a fight between mother and daughter.
Dagnabbit, remember in our interview, darling?
Yeah, mother and daughter comes down into the breast, etc. What is that interaction? We're talking about electrical impulse embedding itself in the chemical body.
Right.
So,
that electrical brain goes, it seems to be more ground, more antecedent, more first than the body.
Mm-hmm.
Goes from inner to the outer. So that the tactile zone, the more center of consciousness, figures out a pattern. Says, "Oh, I'm getting I got a problem here. I'm going to send it to one of the senses, which is out here on the skin,
right?
Body organ.
It takes a material form.
Yeah.
In your body somewhere.
From the electrical impact.
And so, is illness, is our addiction to not only the electronic environment, but the content that is put on top of that.
That's a disease.
Yes, it's a disease.
Yeah. We're having this synaptic thing, and a television extension of the brain communicate electric communication, which is doing okay. Now you bring in the extension of a television, and that electric space is conflicted, or the human perceives it's conflicted, because we've got a new space we're stuck in, so it sends the signal to the surface, and the surface is the other medium, movies, books, talk shows, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
They're all the surface diseases.
Right, right.
Of the electric synapse, which has a conflict. What's the conflict?
Right.
We had the electric space imposed on us since the telegraph, and the chemical, and our consciousness can't take that, because we've got images of walking around in this slower body for thousands of years, and all of a sudden we're in the instantaneous ESP zone.
Right, right.
That's the conflict.
That's interesting, because tell me if I'm reflecting your thought.
Yeah, remember using words. Look at the process. You're going to attempt to translate me into language, which will probably personally be not exactly as my language. So you are not going to get it exactly, but we understand the flaw that's embedded here, so we will try to see if you approximate
this, let's say, critique this thought from your point of view. Because it's almost cliche McLuhanism that the previous media becomes content for the new media.
Yes.
But now, it sounds like what you're saying, instead of books content for movie content for TV, TV's creating content which is now becoming content for books and
They're taking turns being the superficial ground, because the real ground is the constant electric eternity. The electric grid, the humming that's been going on for 110 years. So, yes, this is books, movies, and that went through the linear sequence of evolution until 1960. So then from 60 to 90 is this mixing up of order and the turns being ground. That's what my chart shows.
So but they're not even taking turns being ground. They're all being ground and figure at the same time.
That's right. That's right. That's why I had holeopathic satellite / computer. Holeopathic satellite is in every one of them. The ground, higher level ground is satellite. Then the next subset ground is radio, TV, computer, satellite square, right? And it's holeopathic, meaning it's already disappeared. It's not even ground. The switching, that's why I have monad, triad, dyad, 1, 3, 2, tetrad. I put them out of order. It's not sequential. That's what that means. Monad, LaRouche, triad, McLuhan, dyad, 2, which should be up here where McLuhan is, but it's in the third position, but it's dyad, that's 2. And then tetrad, and then pentad. So I'm taking a visual map and putting it out of sync to show that the figure grounds are flipping and it's beyond linear sequencing, which is what we did up to 1960, right? No, but the flipping of content figure is what's going on. That's why the ground is the White House. When there's that kind of flipping ground, figure ground, there's only one medium left. Some guy saying, we're headquarters and we're going to tell you whether the UFOs land or not, or whether we have peace or not. That's why everybody fights with herd journalism, packed journalism, of what's the president say. So they never stop focusing on the White House. The president comes in, they give him 100 days, and then, oh, he fucked up. Oh, no. Who's going to be the next president? And the campaigns get longer and longer and longer. Okay, so it's just focusing on the word that makes the market.
But with like the Bush administration, have those two environments merged between the White House and the press,
where they
so co-opted that it really is...
Well, that happened a long time ago. That happened, you could say, in 1947, where the National Security Act said, yes, the White House can lie to the people, and the newspapers will agree to that.
Okay.
So the New York Times, by 1970, operated under that agreement, were turned into the underground press, because by that time television became the agreed medium. Newspapers were obsolete. McLuhan wrote about that.
Right.
And then it went on to cable TV, and then by the time of Reagan, there was no news, no information, and no White House. Just a guy laughing regardless of what was going on.
Can I ask this?
Right? You get that?
Yes, yes. Can I ask this? If it is that...
Would you say skice this?
Can I ask this?
Oh.
Can I ask this? If it is that we're chip body dominant right now.
Well, actually, we're all flipping in and out of them.
But because of the miniaturization,
yeah.
And we're on the cell phone, and the cell phone's like the main means. You know,
it's the main recognizable right. Ground, but it's actually flipping like he's describing out of the book, and that take turns being ground.
Right, right.
It's just one quarter of the whole gestalt.
Yeah.
It's not any more or less prominent.
Yeah, that's why it was chip landscape in the 70s and 80s.
But
then it became a body, which is tiny and it's not as big.
But still, maybe it's the same question then.
Yeah.
Because if it is, I'm just saying that maybe it is a chip because you can consume the book, TV, and everything in the chip.
Yeah.
So it's miniature, you get to take it with you, and maybe it flips.
The chip is like a shapeshifter. It says, okay, now I'm TV for
yes,
you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Now I'm moving.
It gets to be personal,
yeah.
You know, et cetera.
Now
but
I'm
yet,
telephone.
When people reflect upon the world, and their greatest influence, even with the chip, is still the television body.
Well, that's the one way. I don't want to have to keep telling you and reacting to what you're telling me. I'm sick of interacting with you, so I lay back. Okay, I'll shift to the TV. You have a chip. And okay, tell me stuff.
What is it?
And you come on, you know, you're a dead rather, and you say, well, it looks like we got a problem in Ethiopia today.
Besides the eating of it, that it comes to, it's the ingestion, it's the disease. It's the disease of that television body that I think even subsumes the chip body.
Yeah.
The chip only brings television to you and allows it to be miniaturized.
Well, the disease becomes dispersed, and so as a result, as I show on my chart, you have chronic fatigue, you have environmental allergies, immune deficiency, all different chemical body reactions to the stress of not knowing what's the central position.
But television is the central position. Even with all the media, television...
It's the central position being someone tells me what to do.
But you see it reflected in fashion. You see it reflected in mind, in music, in mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
What makes it out there still is the television.
And it's all
Bob says it's
over.
the conserving
media. Part. Yeah.
It allows us to think we still live in the United States of America because it props up that image and holds it in place in our mind even though there is no such thing anymore.
Yeah. And it allows us to think we got bodies that have fashion. fashion shows with, or that there's art, or there's music, or there's some star, or Oprah's going to tell us about something. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think that's very interesting in and of itself.
Yeah.
I mean, that out of all the extensions exhumed that we interact with, that one is so powerful.
Yeah, because it's
something. It's the externalization of the central nervous system.
Well, as a package, you're saying as a.
It externalizes all.
It externalizes all
of the senses simultaneously.
Sub smell. And don't touch, but you can travel. You can fly. You can.
No, it does have kinetic movement.
It's kinetic.
Yeah.
Not tactile.
No, tactile is a nonsense. Television is tactile because it's the interplay of all these senses.
Yes.
It's an extension of the tactile.
Except
function.
She's saying it doesn't include some senses for
smell.
Smell.
But many
taste.
People.
Yeah, that's
say,
a weak argument.
No. Many people see.
I don't know anybody that's ever told me they smell or taste.
No, they don't think of it, but they are. They see something. You don't have to have the actual sensory data to think you're filling in the image.
Well, Pavlov's dog doesn't.
That's the participatory.
Pavlov's dog doesn't need food in order to salivate.
Well, that's a fucking dog. That's not a human brain. The participatory element is that you fill in the other senses. That's the point.
But like in some are.
No, some people think smell.
Represented.
What?
So some. I mean.
Well, they'll develop smell vision and say, "Oh, wow, this is smell." And I'll say, "Well, we already could smell, but we didn't want to acknowledge it."
So is the greatest invention then persistence of vision? 60 frames a second, 30 frames a second television?
No.
That must be the greatest invention.
Oh,
it was the able.
Television is not vision, it's all the senses.
But it's the way the flicker of the electronics, it's the electronics flickering in this zone that absolutely reflects reality at this speed. And so that must
what
be one
speed
of
the. Speed when you say this?
Well, the way that you reproduce television is by. is a series of 26 fields which comprise frames. So it's 60 fields that comprise 30 frames.
Do you have frames with video?
So, yeah. Oh. Because it's just on and off. It's digital.
Digital TV.
Right. Well, that's what it is.
It's no longer the cathode ray tube.
Right.
It's plasma.
So the mind is able to see everything running at this current level on film at 60 frames a second and on television at 30 frames a second. That's the electronic spectrum.
Right.
It's resonant frequency.
So what's your point about that?
That must be the greatest invention ever is the discovery of persistence of vision. Because that's what Abe was able...
Persistence of vision. You mean the fill-in factor that you bring together the fragmented images.
That's the creation of television and movies that when we see a scene projected, when you film it and you project it back, you can either slow-mo it or hyperspeed it, but when you can do it at the regular speed of light...
Not high or slow. And when you do it the regular...
Regular is 30 frames per second television, 60 frames per second.
Is the regular, not high or low?
Right.
It means what?
It means that you are seeing it as we are right now.
Yeah.
And when we watch a movie, we're watching things shot, at 24 frames a second per film and 30 frames a second for television. They discovered that through science,
Can I do this 60 times a second?
Yeah, but you have to have it like this.
Oh.
You have to go like that.
And it looks like it's not moving.
And it reproduces at a natural speed of light. And so they discovered that through, early in cinematic, technology.
Right. So the point, you call it the persistence of vision?
Yeah, that's what it's called. It's called the discovery of being able to reproduce reality, to be able to take films and reproduce it at a level where you're able to enter it because you don't, it's not slow-mo and you don't live life
slow-mo.
Okay,
now listen to this. I told a person I met who hadn't heard any of this talk before, and they said, well, if I stop working... or in my off hours, how do I stop being addicted to TV? I say, take in a statement like I'm telling you. And I told her, she loves Oprah. I said, Oprah is the most dangerous person on the planet. Now, I said, that's totally ridiculous to you. She said, yeah. I said, well, you start researching and prove me wrong.
Okay.
Or even prove me right. And she said, where did I start looking? Just go on the internet, start looking around.
Okay.
Now, I would say to you that what you just said with such certainty is wrong.
Okay.
Prove to yourself that either you're right or I'm right.
What are you disagreeing with?
Your terms. The persistence of vision.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
This quest.
Oh, okay.
That I'm saying that everything you said.
I learned it in film school.
Right.
That's the term.
But look, that's culturally determined. That's culturally. The Africans don't see reality that way. So what is their persistence of vision? Maybe we would say there is the same.
They don't need, they don't, they would experience it as soon as they get a laptop and they start watching video.
They would.
Yes, no, they naturally would. If they played anything on YouTube, they're watching persistence and vision.
Right. Now, that is just the physiological part. There's the mind and cultural interpretation of what they're seeing.
But I'm talking about the technology, the body, the way your mind and eyes work.
Right.
Found a way, you know, like a resonant frequency. If they play a certain note, it affects your body in a particular way.
Okay, I'm saying that that's wrong. Now,
Okay. Now
prove to yourself.
But what is wrong
prove
about
yourself
it?
That
tell
I'm
the
right.
Tell
you
me
do
know
that.
Anything about it.
Yeah,
tell
I don't
me,
know anything
tell
about
me the parameters.
I'm
okay.
saying, like I said, you think Oprah's a woman. You think Oprah's the greatest thing. I'm
right.
saying it's a fact that she's the most dangerous person in the world.
Okay.
Start trying to find the information that proves me right.
Okay.
And of course, she'll spend a long time doing that,
but
and
she
won't even know what she's looking for.
Okay, so that one's pretty straight and clear.
Yeah.
Oprah sucks. And
but now
so
we'll take your
saying,
sake.
Right,
your
saying,
thing, the persistent
right,
vision theory
right.
or explanation that's taught by
right.
science and film school,
yes.
I say it's wrong. Prove me correct.
What's right? What's the alternative, though?
We don't know, because everything that people think or say science proves this
is only half true.
50% of that stuff is at 10 years later. Oh, whoops, we made a mistake.
Yeah.
It's actually the opposite. So that's all he's saying.
Okay, very good.
So anything that
right.
he comes across or I come across,
right.
it's never
that's
that
why
certain.
I love this total biology stuff, because
right.
it totally just proved everything I've learned for 30 years. It's fantastic.
Right.
So now I can just, you know,
right.
okay.
It helps you look and remember that you don't know or that
don't
you're always
anything.
Making sense.
Right.
Whereas, you know, so it's like 50-50. You know, half the people I tell them, going too far.
Right.
And other people, that's
right.
So you watch the types that respond and reject.
So if we're mostly energy, we're mostly this energetic
okay, we're
spectrum
in this body and it feels like, oh, geez, I'd hate to die. And every time you die, hey, this is fucking great. It didn't even hurt. But in this perspective, it seems like a terrible thing.
Right.
And it's like when Bowert died, you know.
Yeah.
Where his last girlfriend and James are getting psychic thoughts from him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, direct. They know he's talking to them.
Yes.
So,
You were going to say something about Bowert. You were going to tell him.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to get into it. Yeah, I didn't tell you what happened. But
yeah.
Anyways, we'll get there maybe. I don't know. But it's a long story.
He's dead. I know, he's up there watching.
No, he's interacting. And he wants us to do certain things. But the sensation from this perspective is that it's a drag to die. But as soon as anybody dies, they like it. Because they're looking at it from the other side. Frank Zappa?
Yeah.
How do you know?
When we did that, when we had him with Glow, and he was pissed off.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when the Boodian came up and did something.
No, he's pissed off at what Gail was doing.
No, he was pissed off. He was pissed off at the way that he left the planet. And his sister was there asking.
Who said that? I know, not the Evergreens, but another guy said that. Another meeting we had. But I didn't know Glow said that.
Yeah, it was when the Boodians showed.
Yeah, yeah, the Boodians. And what happened, Frank?
The four bodies?
No, Bob's coming to the next lecture.
She wants to stick me in there and see how they handle my questions.
Because by knowing your perspective and what we were talking about in total biology, what is the
total biology is talking about the chemical body and really hyper knowledge of the chemical body. But what about the other bodies?
No, that's what I was saying. Her total biology starts with the spark of a thought, which is a mirror of the chip.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and that metastasizes or manifests in the chemical body. So already these four bodies are interacting and influencing each other, and that's the disease, right? And that's why you have to cut off the media.
If a thing happens, what total biology says is a thing can happen in reality, you know, so it comes up to shoot you. Or you can see an image of it, or have thought of it, and they're all means
registered.
The biological can mean something in the biological brain. all these
TVs. Oh, it's very good.
Brain scan, and maybe it'll see things, I'll see it better and understand the newness of it.
Right.
But then I'll relate it to the other body, so that's what she wants to see.
Well, the brain,
she's counter-probing by putting me in their fucking cult.
The brain, the human brain and nervous system is essentially, I think, not much more evolved than it was like 2 million years ago or something like that.
That's what Boone says. The biology has not evolved.
But it's built upon platforms that go back probably 2 to 3 billion years. It's so ancient. I mean, why would changing the sensory input reconfigure your brain? It might make some new pathways or change the chemistry a little bit, but fundamentally that brain is too ancient, I think, to be radically altered by new sensory input.
Well, McLuhan quoted this scientist who proved in the 70s that, or felt he proved, in his knowledge, that the brain had stopped evolving. Therefore, it reacted to second nature and the new things that humans made. The real evolution was culture and technology, and the brain continuously banged its head up against it and didn't comprehend it. Therefore, it always was tragic and violent in its response to the second phase of evolution. That's what McLuhan quoted. In other words, it's saying that, yes, it cannot register the new stuff. So it goes around bumping into something it doesn't see and getting mad. So that's why there's yoga and all these different disciplines to get you to see through your mind. Your mind is a biological animal instinct that just reacts to things. Krishnamurti talks about this.
And the total biology really emphasizes the instinctual nature, because you've got your brain stem, which is, that's the very first brain. If you go from the tiny organisms, they're all eating, absorbing, digesting, and shitting.
Flight or react, or you said with Susie.
Yeah.
Embrace or run.
Yeah, that's a one cell thing.
But that's the original instinctual thing.
Yeah, and then you get something that just does what they call the endoderm functions. It's just eating, sleeping, night. So that's the endoderm, and that's where our brain stays. And then you get a mesoderm, where it has to move in the environment, and that's the muscles, the middle part of us. And then the ectoderm, and that brain is the cerebellum. And then the ectoderm is the cerebrum. So three brains with three stages, three levels of us. The ectoderm is our skin, where when, we had to go up against the sun, we were finally in the light, and we had to protect our skin from the sun. And in the total biology, they talk about, in the CAT scan, they can identify the area where there's a conflict in the body part, whether it's ecto, endo, or mesoderm.
It's great.
And that means, the brain, like the cerebrum, was like probably 50,000 years ago when humans finally appeared. Or maybe a bit earlier. But our brains.
Now, what's a bit earlier? 70,000 or 30,000? You know what I mean? What does it earlier way back was, or earlier
well, the
compared
ectoderm,
to us?
I'm wondering if ectoderm was more in the animal stages.
Oh, earlier, further, 10,000, 100,000.
Yeah, 100,000. So, the instinctual stuff and the way the brain was developed, like if we have a primitive reaction of someone who stabbed you in the back, then your skin tries to protect you, and it would develop a melanoma where you think you're being stabbed. So that's an ectoderm response, and that's sort of later on in development in a cortical region. Of course, it does sound sort of stupid, but anyway.
Listen, I was just thinking, I got an idea that. That they are mapped, they're taking the fact that the brain responds instinctively based on pre...
I'm doing good.
A little bit. That was such a great... Like, you're like, more? That's great.
I was thinking how a stab in the back, that's a human artifact. The knife, man-made. So, the original brain has its programming and it cannot be influenced. So it goes through these instinctual responses. But what causes the conflicts in humans is second nature. Words, knives, guns, bulldozers, TV shows, it's the total biology is actually dealing with the effect of second nature on first nature.
Yes.
And you know, and it's instinctive. It's an automatic thing. And there's a gap between them, but these guys have sort of figured out a way to connect with the two, or to map one on the other.
So what it is you need like an effective reprogramming or deprogramming of second nature, right?
Yeah. In regard to how the first nature has programmed you. They're showing you how first nature responded to second nature. So it might be a concept that deals with the cold fusion effect. Cold fusion being the first technology that merges first and second nature. This is a conceptual system inside the software Android Beam, which is not the merger of first and second nature like cold fusion, but an imitation of it, right? So the immortality of the internet, 24/7, never stopped, doesn't wind down. That's pre-cold fusion. So maybe these guys have come up with a conceptual system in medicine that merges first and second nature.
So what about then?
Remember what you said. When she talks about the brain influences the body, well, we all know the subconscious affects us. But she's mapping, they map the brain physiology.
Thank you.
And it's not some vague unconscious.
Right, exactly.
It's a mapping that affects this part of the body. But there is human communication in the interval that causes emotional pain. And emotional pain comes from communication, which is second nature.
So what then, like, for the reprogramming, isn't that what religion, magic, ritual, isn't that what that is all about?
They're all attempts at reprogramming.
Aren't they all?
And they are superseded by later programmings, printing press, movies, satellites, and digital. Those are new programming mechanisms, which is McLuhan's point, media programmers. He said, I said in a lecture back in 2001, that in 1953, Crick and Watson discovered DNA, the biological programming.
Yes.
But in the same year, McLuhan discovered the software environmental programming, MEME. So we didn't realize our
what year was that?
1953. They both.
That was the year John Lilly. It was pretty close to the year John Lilly wrote Programming and Metaprogramming in the Human Biocomputer. Oh no, he wrote that in the
53?
50s. Yeah.
Before Erica?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Erica's 1970. I'd say that was in the 60s.
Why
would he write that?
He was doing sensory deprivation research for the military.
Sure, in the 50s?
Yeah. They were trying to see if they, you know, if they could use it.
L. Ron Hubbard realized that there were all kinds of subsets of programming. L. Ron Hubbard said the E-meter programs us, and you have to deprogram through the E-meter. So there were these subsets of programming, but they didn't understand.
What John liked about the isolation tank was that it didn't have a bias. You weren't getting someone else's package. You were going into a space where you could look at your own nervous system in a neutral space without being biased by or programmed by media or other human influences.
Yeah, and that's a subset. I mean, a tank is nothing compared to a whole world using television. It's puny, a little fucking tank.
The whole fucking world using television is an action that is programming you. In the tank, you can look at you can examine your own program, you can examine your own nervous system being programmed from outside.
Right. You find out that you are programmable. Okay,
yeah.
So you find that fact, which was a retrieval of what primitive societies already knew. Okay, visual culture they forgot that they were programmed. Visual culture. So then the electric age allowed a guy like John Lilly to discover it because we were being programmed by television, which made you aware that you're collectively programmed. That's a bigger knowledge than a little tank. think it's that. In other words, if we realize we're being programmed,
okay, we're being programmed.
Okay, do you realize that print programmed whole collectivities and memes of people, the 100th month effect, and then the television program people? That's adapting Lily's biological truth to second nature on a wide scale immediately. It's a bigger discovery.
Your point was that
he was learning how to get his hands on the metaphysical steering wheel and drive his own programming rather than just being programmed from outside.
Yeah, which is a silly literate reaction that I can program myself, which is the traditional mystical tradition, and the Descartes saying I think therefore I am. What he didn't realize is that the collectivity was being programmed, and that you couldn't get an isolated tank and program yourself because the whole society was being programmed and would affect you.
Yeah, you come out of it, yeah, and you just get slammed.
He ends up in a cult, the Oscar Acacia, Echego.
Yeah, but he moved through certain phases, realized he was in a cult, and left.
Yeah, but he gets seduced, and he went on to other cults, ketamine cult. He constantly writing.
That wasn't that was a cult of one. He was the only guy doing ketamine.
But it's a cult, and then he got addicted to each little tiny technology, which is what all the humans did. McLuhan was the only one who didn't get addicted to any particular technology.
What's the most effective of all the mysticism, esotericism that's out there to deprogram a program? What do you think is the most effective or healthiest?
Thomas Aquinas. That's what McLuhan said. That Thomas Aquinas' understanding of the ratios of proportions among proportions was the most profound metaphysical insight. Now that's a human concept.
Right.
Then when you realize through Finnegan's Wake and McLuhan that has been externalized as a collective environment.
Right.
And that's super mystical or super profound that obsolesces any of the profundity of Thomism or Thomas Aquinas.
And I think it's Ho'oponopono.
Wait, what's his?
Ho'oponopono.
Who's that?
The Hawaiian kahuna prayer and philosophy of taking 100% responsibility for everything that goes on around you.
What is the words?
And the prayer is, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you.
Now,
that's great.
Now, that's a concept. It's a string of concepts. We have to realize that what you just said goes on every day when you're on the cell phone. What's the first phrase?
I love you.
I take your call. What's the next thing?
I'm sorry.
The person says something, I say I'm sorry.
Please forgive me.
Please forgive me. The other person. That is the drama of cognition, but done by millions of people at the same time.
It's a subtle thing, but
it's an act of love to communicate.
Yeah.
I received your information. I acknowledge you, then I return your favor by correcting you or saying something that supplements it, and then you might disagree, and then we forgive each other. Thank you.
Yes.
I'll see you later. That's thank you.
Yeah. Right.
The subtle trap about that is the presumption that you are guilty for something that needs to be forgiven, either within yourself or within the culture or people around you.
I don't see this guilt as much as being responsible. And to me, everybody interprets different, I'm sure. But to me, it means that I don't become a sticky trap for anything that is in my environment.
And it's a reminder, it's like a vigilance, being vigilant.
What are the words?
I don't necessarily dodge it or what, but maybe I just let it go through me. It's just the old
I love
Juno
you.
Move that if someone is directing something at you, you just are a trap for it and it goes back to the person and allows them to process it without you being, without it being interpreted through you or which distorts it.
Yeah.
I
called?
Love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you.
I love you, I'm sorry. Guilt comes after love you, not before it. I love you, I'm sorry.
Please forgive me, thank you. And it can be, it's not about them, it's not about you forgiving them or whatever. It's all about yourself. You don't need to presume,
well, it's four
anything
things.
About anyone else.
It's A is to B, it's C is to D. I love you, too, I'm sorry, as I forgive you, too, thank you.
But also, I think it's right because it takes a bigger person to say I'm sorry for something that maybe usually people don't want to go there. And it is more of a personal healing to be vulnerable and to say, you know, to come out and say it even if it's unnecessary. You know, just put yourself out.
Yeah.
Okay, where does the deities or the big kahuna? The kahuna, right?
The kahuna.
What island?
I don't know. It was some woman who started it going, and then how I heard about it is I heard about this Hawaiian psychologist who
What's his name? Remember?
Hugh Lin. And he had this job in a psychiatric hospital. He was in charge of a ward of criminally insane.
Oh, I heard about this guy.
Yeah, a lot of people have heard this story. So he just sits in his office with the files of all these people, says the prayer, takes responsibility for them in his life, and he just wants to clean out his garbage.
And one by one, people start becoming sane and leaving the prison.
Exactly.
And he's never even really interacted with it.
You know, the one thing about the thank you, is that like thank you for listening or just thank you and it doesn't?
Thank you.
Thank you was kind
it
of
could
interesting.
Be
the feeling of
the
gratitude.
Universe, just the gratitude thing,
So now, Carolyn, they get healed and they go out and they get an apartment, they buy a TV, and then they fucking get totally pissed off at the fucking president, forget everything, go fucking nuts again. The point is, that's a concept about, what is that, like Jerry asked you, did you hear about the great Braden story he told you, you know, that something affected something, one plant got sore when the other plant got hurt, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Those kind of things remind people that we're quite interconnected, all right? Now, people in primitive societies were very interconnected via speech. That was acoustic space. Then visual space fragmented them. Then electric space brought them back together and added a new synergistic effect.
And the computer fragmented the electric space.
So we need new scientific evidence to counter Greg Braden and the one he was saying about the membrane, you know, Bruce Lipton, which are emphasizing the connectivity. We need to have retrieval of Newtonian psychology and bring back the Cartesian mind-body split to recognize the disconnection of things. Then you realize that you're just playing different models, and then you get to realize that the thing is no both are happening. Then you realize it's already happening in the TV environment. That's McCone's point. Any idea that comes up is just a reflection.